The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1049. It's Monday, the 23rd of April, 2018. By the way, we've just launched a new podcast series called Business Lives. The podcast will feature interviews with high-profile guests from the world of business. If you want to listen to some of these, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. Okay, today on the podcast, I have Craig Brown, CEO and Exploration Manager, Rodney Boucher of ECR Minerals, that's the ECR ticker, and they discuss the start of drilling at Bung Bong and the acquisition of Creswick at the Gold Project in Victoria, Australia. Also on the podcast, I have Andrew Knott, CEO of Savannah Petroleum, SABP ticker there. And Andrew talks about their oil discovery at the Bashir 1 exploration well in Niger. Also on the podcast, Gil Holtzman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas, ECO ticker. And Gil gives an update on the 3D seismic processing of their prospective block in Guyana, which have identified targets that could expand their resource. And as of Monday, I have Malky talking about the following stocks: Savannah Petroleum, Echo Energy, STX Energy, Rockhopper Exploration, Falcon Oil and Gas, and Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. Plus, also, Connor Campbell, market analyst with Spreadex, talks about the following stocks: Whitbread, Boohoo, and Facebook. Plus, I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Craig Brown, CEO and Exploration Manager, Rodney Boucher of ECR Minerals. That's ECR ticker. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Good morning.
Thank you, Justin.
Now, you've had a fair bit of news out in the last week or so, and we'll get to the details of that in a bit. But as always, Craig, for people listening right now who's not heard of ECR, give them a brief summary as to what you're all about, please.
ECR is a serious, pure gold exploration company, which is focused on Central Victorian goldfields in Australia. It's a sound jurisdiction. And, certainly our goal is to find the next big gold resource in central Victoria. And we are purely focused on exploration at this moment. And it gives investors potential of large upside. We do have two other projects in Argentina and the Philippines, which are currently on hold at the moment. But Victoria is where we're working.
Okay, good stuff. All right, well, let's go into the news. So we released on the 13th of last week, positive geochemical results and the start of drilling program at Bung Bong. It's a great name, the gold prospect in Victoria, Australia. Take us through the detail of this, if you could, guys.
Well, can I just start off that between the first two licenses that we obtained in Australia or beginning of 2016, mm-hmm. there's a total of 55 prospects over the Avoca and Bayliston license. We did some geophysics last year and narrowed it down to 50 highly prospective sites. Rodney narrowed it down further to look at 8 sites, of which 5 we're working on at the moment. And I'll let Rodney explain further regarding Bung Bong.
Marvellous. Go, Rodney.
Yeah, so as Craig said, we've sort of filtered down to the 5 priority target areas that are most likely going to have the potential to get some sort of good operation up and running. So Bung Bong is one of the priorities, and the first one we've got the drill rig too, so we're going to drill half a dozen holes there. So we're about halfway through that already. Drill half a dozen holes there and make sure that the geology stacks up as we'd like it to be, so that it's got the right architecture that's going to give us something of significant size that we can chase around there. And then that'll lead on to drilling of another prospect just a few kilometres away called Monte Cristo before we move over towards the east and drill 3 more prospects over there.
Excellent stuff. And when do you expect this to complete, and when do you expect the first set of results to come through?
Yeah, well, we as I say, finished 3 holes now, so we're starting to get some samples processed, and we'll get them off to the lab shortly, and hopefully within a few weeks we'll start to get some results from that back. Yeah,
marvelous stuff. Okay, and you've had another bit of news of late. You've acquired Creswick Gold Project in Australia. So take us, you know, through why and what you know about this, if you could, guys.
Yeah, well, Creswick's a project that I've had a little bit to do with for a while. It's another opportunity in Victoria where we've got the chance for a bulk tonnage operation. So it's got significant width to it. The old timers have hammered it with shallow shafts over a total of 3 kilometres in the project area and extending as part of a belt that runs from Ballarat further 10 kilometres to the south. So it's a broad zone that's produced a lot of alluvial gold. There's a lot of alluvial gold shed into the alluvial systems surrounding the lines of reef, and we're talking quite large alluvial systems that's contributed to Ballarat itself, where there was 11 million ounces of alluvial gold produced, and the Creswick lead system, where there was 2.7 million ounces of gold produced. Probably, arguably, a lot of that's come out of this line of reef. So 25 metres wide, opportunity for some bulk mining close to surface or at surface, so it's a pretty exciting prospect.
Yeah, and I've noticed here that this licence costs you nothing at all.
Yeah, well, I'd actually worked on it in the past with a guy in Australia called Rudy Gomez, who I gave some assistance to find Carrapateena deposit. And he was keen to continue exploring, but unfortunately fell a bit ill last year. And I went over, so it's come with me to ECR, yeah.
But that, is that rare that you get a license for free or not?
Well, as I say, it was unfortunately for the project at the time and where we were at the time that the owner of the license couldn't continue to work on it. So he literally said to me, "Can you take it over?" So I did so, and I needed to find a home for it, and ECR all came along at the right time. Yeah.
Can I explain a little bit more about that, Justin?
Yeah.
Carrapateena is a project in South Australia near Adelaide, and it's a very large copper gold project. And this Rudy Gomez, who is a metallurgist from the Philippines who lived in Australia for a number of years, drilled two holes, one of which he had a $100,000 grant from the government of South Australia. Rodney designed the location of the holes. One of the holes had an intercept of 917 metres at something like 2 grams per ton copper. Over 2% copper. So it was a fantastic hit. Mm. And he went on to selling that project for $350 million. So from two holes, they created $350 million of value. And Rudy Gomez was the initial first owner of that project. And he also owned Creswick, which is being now passed on to us because he had some loyalty to Rodney because Rodney had been working on Creswick for him. So it's a great opportunity. Let's hope he's chosen Creswick as well as he chose Carrapateena.
Yeah, wow, it's a fantastic story. Yeah, absolutely. Excellent stuff. So when are you going to start sort of field activities here?
Probably we'll assess it, but it may be later on, more in the second half of the year or early second half of the year. We'll be working on the current 5 properties at least till up to the end of May. So, we'll assess it from there, but probably in the second half of 2018.
Okay. And so just to get it in my head and for listeners, to the podcast, to get it straight in their heads too. So the next sort of milestone will be what?
Well, drilling results coming out. There's after the 5-6 holes at Bungbong, we'll be on to Monte Cristo, then across the 3 other projects which we'll be drilling, and so it'll be the results coming out, and from those results hopefully we'll be able to produce a form of JORC compliant inferred exploration target, a JORC compliant exploration target, and then with further drilling we should have a resource. But it's really assessing these 5 projects just to see how they come up, but we're very positive about everything.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Craig, well, you know what's coming. If people are listening to this podcast and they like the sound of this, and I've got to point out, you are, you know, a micro cap at the moment, so it doesn't take a lot to move the needle. You're less than 3 million market cap. So if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of what you're saying here but are not following the story, can you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please?
We're a serious company. We're a pure exploration play, not an investment company. We've got minimal overhead costs. We've cut everything to the ground, and so we're actually spending money developing the projects or working on the projects. If this thing takes off, it won't be a two or three times mover. We get a decent hit. We expect the stock price to go up 10 to 20 times. That's how exploration companies work. So don't expect a small return, but expect a big return when we're successful.
Marvellous, guys. Rodney, Craig, thanks very much for that, and hopefully we'll be chatting soon in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
Great, thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Knott, CEO of Savannah Petroleum, SAVP. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And first of all, congratulations on the good news there. Sort of encouraging start to that campaign you've got there, Niger. And we'll go into that in a bit. Before we do, Andrew, go into the news. For people listening right now who are not familiar with Savannah Petroleum, give them a brief summary as to what you're all about, please.
Okay, Savannah's an AIM-listed oil and gas company. We have two principal assets. The first is we have 50% of the main petroleum basin under license in the West African Republic of Niger, which is what today's news flow centres around. And the second is we're in the process of acquiring interest in two producing oil and gas fields and a midstream business in southeast Nigeria. That is our principal assets. In terms of our funding and our financing, we've got a very strong institutional shareholder base, which has proven to be very supportive to us throughout the course of the past 4 years.
Marvellous. Okay, well, this news, and excuse the pronunciation if I get it wrong, but Bushir Oil Discovery, and he says, encouraging start to the multi-well drilling campaign in Niger. So take us through the detail of this, and take us through, firstly, the results you've got back from this. Andrew?
So if you don't mind, I think first of all, maybe if I just put it into context. So As I said, we've got about half of the main petroleum basin in Niger under license, okay? And the other half is held by CNPC, the Chinese National Petroleum Corporation, which is the largest oil and gas company in the world. They've invested billions of dollars in their acreage over the course of the past 7 years. They've had a very high success rate, 3 in every 4 wells that they've drilled has worked, and they've proved up a very substantial resource base. And what's important is that when the predictability stems from the geology, and basically the key thing that we're looking for is prospectivity in what's called the Eocene Soccer Alternances formation, which is typically a formation that's about 1300 to 1800 meters in depth, and for which there's basically 6 sands and shales numbered, which the sands are numbered E0 to E5, which you're looking to try and target. So basically, when you drill a prospect, there's typically deemed to be prospectivity at each of these six levels within any given prospect. It's hard to predict pre-drill exactly which of those sands will prove to be productive. But a typical discovery in Niger will have between 1 and 2 of those sands that prove to be productive. And that's exactly what we've proven with this well. So what we've always said is that the business plan for the Niger asset is we're not going to reinvent the wheel. We're just going to continue to do what has been done so successfully by the neighbouring operator on their acreage and to prove out that the geology that we have is similar. And that's exactly what this morning's announcement says. We've managed to get light oil to surface. The pressure data indicates it's on exactly the same depth API trend as we've seen elsewhere in the basin. We have a level of pay which is similar to many of the other wells which have been drilled in the basin. Is very good news. And I think the other thing to say is that I'm very happy with the performance that we've had in the drilling. The well's been drilled earlier, much quicker than we originally anticipated in 25 days instead of 35. It's coming at a cost level which is, we expect to be significantly lower than budget. That will have knock-on effects in terms of what we're able to do going forward, in terms of the timing we expect the next two wells in the campaign to be to take, Ambi and Kunama, and for any other additional wells that we choose to drill following that. So it's the first step in what we think will be a very long drilling campaign, and we're very happy about the results.
Yeah, and like you say, this must sort of validate your sort of, you know, plan and your modus operandi here. So it's a success on two fronts, really, isn't it? I mean, first of all, success on this one, but going forward, it must fill you with a bit of confidence.
Yeah, and if you look at the comments that our chairman made this morning, who is a very well-respected geologist who's found a lot of oil in other companies in the past, you can sense the excitement that we have in the company for what's about to happen to us. So, it's clearly very good, but most importantly, what I'd say is it validates what we've been saying in the past. Like, we expected the geology to be similar, and it's proven to be similar, and I think that's really the important thing.
Okay, cool. And so the next bit of news...
Anybody who wants to go on our website, you will see a picture of the oil sample that we've taken, so you can see the real product of our endeavours.
Okay, cool. And so the next bit of action or news to come out, Andrew, is what?
So in terms of on the Niger project, there will probably be the spud announcement, which we expect to make in 10 to 15 days' time. And then following that, it will take up to 30 days to drill up to 35 days to drill the next well. Clearly, if we have the drilling performance that we saw on Bushaya, on Andy, we would get a result earlier than that. Outside of Niger, I think you can expect that we'll provide an update in terms of the performance of the seven assets, which we remain very, very happy with. And there'll be various other updates on things as and when we do them. But I think there will be a lot of news on this story going forward, because we'll have this continuous drilling campaign coupled with the news as we deliver the cash flows in Niger.
Absolutely. Well, as if to summarise, and if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of this positive news and the programme going forward but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think the first thing I would say is that we have is that with the seven acquisition, we'll be generating significant cash flows. That will be combined with an underlying asset base in Niger, which we believe to offer the chance to make repeatable exploration discoveries, and that those discoveries are relatively straightforward to commercialise from both a technical and a commercial perspective going forward. And the result of this is that we're going to end up with a lot of news flow as we develop the business going forward. So I would say those are the three key things to highlight at this stage.
Excellent. Andrew, like I say, you've got a lot going on there, so hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Gil Holzman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. That's ECO ticker. Gil, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justin. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And just the end of last week, they did an update on the 3D processing. And we'll go into the detail of that in a bit. But Gil, for people listening who are not aware of the company, explain what you're all about, please.
We are an oil and gas exploration company. We have a strategy of identifying prospective oil basins in quite an early stage, somewhat underexplored. We enter in early. We negotiate directly with governments to acquire certain prospective oil blocks. We did it in Namibia. We did it in Guyana before any first discovery by Exxon in Guyana. Then internally, we de-risk the play using our own financial resources and technical abilities. And we have a habit to partner with bigger companies in order to help us with their technical horsepower and, of course, financial resources. We did it in Namibia with Azinam, with Talo Oil, and latest with ONGC, the Indian Parastatal Company. And the same we did in Guyana. We partnered with Talo Oil there. And we have an option agreement with Total, according to which after their review of the recently shot 3D, they have an option to farm in and gain 25% working interest in Guyana ahead of the drilling campaign that we are currently planning.
Okay, so it's a big target, and you've just received this, you've been going through this 3D seismic you've received, and you gave an update last week. So take us through the update, Gil. What does it tell you?
First of all, we always in the position that we believe that our shareholders should be very well informed about our whereabouts and what exactly we are doing within the company. If you recall, we completed a very large 3D survey last year at the fourth quarter, end of September, where we acquired more than 2,500 square kilometers of 3D, again in partnership with Talo and using Western Geophysical. The nature of this kind of process is it's an ever ongoing process. You need to process the data, you need to interpret it internally, you need to see exactly what you're looking for. So we gave an update. Fortunately enough, the initial targets that we identified based on the extensive 2D that we acquired together with Talo is now in many ways validated. We started to focus on the west corner of the block, where we already announced that we see two big targets that might contain up to 900 million barrels. This is in many ways verified now by the 3D. However, the nature of the 3D and the nature of this process and interpretation work is that we continually seeing additional structures. We managed to identify big sand blocks that might, of course, be the good reservoir. We managed to identify some potential traps, and we see this stretching all the way from the west side of the block to the east side. So, I should be careful, but I think that that the result of this ongoing processing and interpretation effort is that we're going to end up hopefully with, as I said, validation of the initial targets that we already announced, but also additional targets and structure that might have the potential, again, I want to be very careful, to increase the volumes and the number of targets that we see on the block, and this is currently ongoing. The good thing about the way we structure the process is that we basically have four set of eyes or four companies looking at the same data in parallel. We have ourselves, ECHO, and our technical team. We have, of course, Talo as the operator doing their own processing and interpretation and keep on receiving very high quality data from PGS while doing the processing of the data. We have Total, which we already send them the first two batches of data that we received from Talo and PGS. So they are doing their own interpretation in parallel. And we also have Gustafsson and Associates from Denver that were tasked by us to issue a CPR, which hopefully will be available for the market by, I would say, probably beginning of June. Again, don't catch me on the exact date, but we believe that we're going to receive the last batch of the process data by end of May, and because of this in parallel kind of work, we will be able to issue a CPR volumetric report by middle of June.
Yeah, so that's I suppose that's the next big milestone there, is it, Gil?
Yes, and as I said, because the four companies are interpreting the process data in parallel, this basically shortens the time for the drilling decision. Because once we complete to review the entire set of the process data by all four companies, then we can get to some kind of an understanding about the additional targets that we identified, the quality of the sands there, the quality of the trap. And once Total exercised the option, after reviewing the data, basically we are drill ready.
Yeah, would it be fair to say then that this data you've got so far is sort of exceeding expectations?
yes, I can tell you that at least within our team, within ECHO, we were we're hoping to at least verify the initial targets that we saw in the 2D. I can tell you for sure that we identified additional targets that has a potential to increase and expand the target inventory on the block, and as a result also the number of potential oil barrels that can be discovered on this block. The good thing about our location is that because of the huge investment in infrastructure being done by now, as of now, by Exxon, and they're putting together an FPSO which is going to be, you know, 10 or 15 kilometers away from our block, is that any target with anything from 50 million to 100 million or 150 million barrels, which is considered to be small for that area, it will be economical viable simply because the infrastructure will already be in place. Having said that, we are targeting a much, much, much bigger target.
Marvelous stuff. Okay, well, Gil, one thing left to do, as always, if someone likes the sound of this and are not yet following you on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
So as I said, the Guyana 3D targets and the interpretation looks very, very promising and looks very encouraging. Internally, as I said, we will probably be able to expand and increase our target numbers, and that will lead to a drilling decision. I think, and again, that's my belief based on current advancement, I believe that we will be able to see the first well being spud in the next, I would say, 10 months. So by the end of the year or beginning of 2019, as the process is currently going. And that's a major, major milestone for the company, of course. Spudding wells on a multi-million barrels targets in offshore Guyana, which considered to be the most prospective exploration area in the world right now. So Guyana is very, very promising, and we feel very comfortable with what we see on the 3D. And in parallel, we have Namibia. Namibia is going to be the target of at least two exploration wells, one in September, one in October, not on our blocks, but in very close proximity. So there's a lot to watch for in both Guyana and Namibia in the next few months, and we will continue to update the market on any progress.
Marvelous stuff, Gil. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority. It's Malky. You all right, fella?
I'm very well, Justin. And you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's a bit cooler this weekend, but do you know what? It's ironic, isn't it? I mean, you just said your other half there was running the marathon in London. I bet they wish they had this weather yesterday, because it does take it out of you. Hottest marathon on record. But your wife got round okay, did she?
Yeah, she did. It, as I said, there was no it was no day for personal best, as they say. But and she did an hour higher than she'd hoped for. But she got around, and she said it was absolutely dreadful all the way around. But we were on the side, in the pub, waiting, checking out. She was going okay.
In the pub, that's the place to be, is it really? Marvellous. All right, so what, you're talking about the oil price is high. Lots of stocks seem to be doing quite well at the moment. I think there's still to come. There's a lag factor sometimes. When the oil price goes up, some stocks don't follow directly, do they? It takes a while to sort of gradually build up, I think, you know?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, and I've been writing about that ever since the bucket list in February, where the oil price at the time we were talking about in the 60s, absolutely delighted. And as I always say on these occasions, you should cross that with the fact that not only is the oil price high, but the industry has got the lowest costs it's had for many, many years. Some of them are 70%, costs are down 70% since the peak in 2014-15. But, what we've got is a whole bunch of stocks, some of which are picking up just because the market has realized that they're too cheap. Some of them are picking up because they've got specific things going on. And I was in the Middle East last week, Justin, and there's a good deal of confidence that that longer term demand for oil is still very high. They tend to agree with my view that the Americans, they literally will not be this thing where people have been going on and on about for 2 or 3 years about, American shale. Americans are making out like bandits at $70, fair enough. Yeah. But they still will only be able to produce the 11 million barrels a day. And the Middle East and Russia will produce a good deal more than that when they need to. So, it's the atmosphere in the Middle East is very positive.
Yeah.
So what I've done is I've picked out 6 stocks, I'm afraid, this morning, where things are happening and your band of retail followers will find very exciting, I think.
Go for it, Marky.
Okay, well, Savannah Petroleum this morning, that's probably the best news they could have hoped for. They've announced this morning that the first well in Niger, this is the Agadir Rift Basin, it's called Bashaya 1, it's in the R3 portion of the R3, R4 block in Niger, is an oil discovery with 10 metres of net pay, importantly across 2 Eocene Succor intervals, which is very important. To me, it already validates the model that Savannah have been going through. Don't forget, with CNPC drilling in the area beforehand, it's very similar to that. Light oil, good quality. Now, they targeted 30 million barrels of oil for this well. We won't be able to tell what it is totally yet, because there's much more testing to do, and they won't test the wells until all 3 have been drilled. But it's a very exciting discovery for Savannah, as I say, validates all the hard work they've been doing in this country for some time. You should know that it's also been done very well, because the well took 16 days to get to TD, which was less than expected, and it completed within 25 days of spud. That was expected to be 35 days, so the well is coming under budget and is already demobilizing to go on to MD1, which is only 6 kilometers away. So might expect some more news from this company in the next month or so. So, all those people who've born with the 7 work in the second half of last year, when they made the 7 acquisition, assets acquisition, and when they are now doing the drilling in Niger, it's all beginning to come together for Savannah. So I couldn't be more pleased for Andrew Knott and his team, who worked very hard to get all this in position.
Yeah, well, hopefully get Andrew on the podcast, maybe today or tomorrow, hopefully today. So, we'll chat through that. But it looks good, and it's gapped up today on that news, the share price, so hopefully it can keep all going.
You should speak to him. I spoke to him yesterday evening, actually, and he was very excited. We're hoping to chat today. He's flying to Nigeria today, I think, so catch him when you can.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Cool. All right, what's next, Lucky?
Right, well, there's a number of other things on the go. So, obviously, we've also seen an announcement from Echo Energy, and this is also good news in the discovery area, because their second workover well on the Fraxion D field in Argentina has been completed with oil and gas flowing to surface, which is very important. It means that because these are mainly gas wells and a gas field, but it means that having been shut in for some time, that the oil in the oil parts of the field have obviously moved back into this area. So there might be some liquids to be taken out there. They're going to put an ESP, an electric submersible pump, in there to get something like 60 barrels a day. But more importantly, this means that with the first workover producing gas to surface, put all these together, and hopefully the the next one as well, means that with their discussions at the moment about the gas pipeline, that the Cannington Salto field, as it's called, is more than likely to be able to be rehabilitated and to be brought into production. So early doors for ECHO, but their first two attempts with the drill bit have been successful.
Yeah, okay. Oddly, as we speak, they're down a touch now, so I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
That's odd, isn't it?
I think people try to think that things are going to happen, and then when it actually happens, they're travelling and arriving, Justin.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Okay, what's next, Malky?
Well, while we're on the subject of major league discoveries, our old friend SDX Energy, Mr. Welsh, I know you've interviewed a number of times.
He was on Friday, on the podcast Friday, doing well.
They came in with an absolute snorter of a discovery at LNB1 in Lalamamuna. Now, this is the eighth out of the nine wells that they're drilling in Morocco this year. Well, they probably drill some more later in the year, but this is eight out of this of the nine wells planned for this year. And these two exploration wells in Lalamamuna were very much that, exploration wells. The other ones might have been more deemed to be more in terms of an appraisal well, but this was an absolute snorter. I mean, 300 meters of gas bearing horizons. It was overpressured, so they couldn't even test after what they had down there. So, with the overpressured nature of it, they're going to have to go back to do the logging and stuff. With we need a bigger set of kit to make this work, and there's very, very likely that this is an entirely new sort of field. I mean, it's effectively a new oil or hydrocarbon or gas bearing play. They've put potential 10.2 BCF of gas on it, which would be absolutely amazing. So it's what they want in country. We've talked many times about the high margins for XGS. We've talked about the fact they need to just question of finding some more gas in order to sell it at this $10 to $12 an MCF, with costs of less than half a dollar an MCF. As I'm sure Mr. Welsh told you on Friday, they are really, really cooking with gas in Morocco, SDX, having just made another big discovery in Egypt the week before.
Well, do you know what I like about Paul? Is he's quite modest. He doesn't come on and say, we told you so, we're banging on with it, we're winning on every front here. He's very modest about what's happening here. And I think, some people almost have to, some investors need to be signposted and say, this is excellent for us. And he doesn't do that. He just talks about the figures, as factual as he can. And I quite like that, always sort of... It's always better than over-promising and under-delivering. Under-promise, over-delivers all the time,
I think, he's done a fantastic job. I think the share price should be a lot higher, but I've noticed it's creeping back into the 60s.
Yeah, it's breaking out here, yeah.
And to be honest, I think that's been needed. The shareholders are very positive. They've got a good band of people. There'll be a lot of... people who've been very pleased with that and vociferous in the social media on Friday and today, and quite rightly too. This is a big discovery and adds to further big discoveries that they've already had this year. So they are in an enormously strong position, SDX.
Excellent stuff. What's next, Malky?
Right, three small ones, but not that small, because Brockhopper announced their results last week. But more importantly, the progress that they're making on the Sea Lion the discovery and development in the Falkland is really moving ahead very sharply, and the reasons it's moving ahead are that CapEx is down again from 1.8 billion to 1.5 billion. The life of field costs of per barrel are now down to $35 a barrel. Costs are down 50% in the last 2 years, as I mentioned earlier on. And they're targeting the final investment decision for the second half of this year. Rockhopper is well funded, It's what we've been waiting for a long time. A huge amount of the development costs of this big field are going to be contributed to by all sorts of companies, and they'll put a final piece of debt in into the jigsaw in due course. You know, at $70 a barrel, there and thereabouts. $60 to $80, what you might call it. Sea Lion is a major league player in world oil over the next few years, and you mustn't forget the Premier are obviously in this as well. They're the main, you know, sort of they've got a major league exposure to this the Sea Lion, and you know, it is all beginning to look. It's been sitting in the bucket list for 2 years for this very reason. And I think it's looking very promising.
Yeah. Well, they are sort of, you know, on the chart, they're trading in that range. You know, we'll see. Should this kind of action should they're very, they're not getting above 28 pence, and 28 pence the low. So, if they break out above that, you could expect it to continue a rise. You know, so
yeah.
Cool. What's next, Mark?
And then finally, I'm going to talk about Falcon Oil and Gas, which quite a lot of people have actually shown an interest in the last year or two. It all went quiet because this is we're talking about Australia here, the Northern Territories, where there's a huge gas discovery. They're in this with Origin, which is a very high quality player. The government in the area, the Northern Territories, had put a moratorium on fracking and onshore development. And last week, while I was away, I noticed that they've lifted the moratorium, which means they can kick on. Origin are paying for this. Falcon is fully carried for dozens of wells, and you know, there's no need for them to go to any money in the foreseeable future, and they'll be kicking on. I'm quite surprised at the share price. I was watching it from the Middle East. It didn't seem to kick on upwards as much as I thought it would, because you know, this was what they needed. And although I'm not expecting them to drill any wells this year, I would have thought that Origin will be kicking on with their plans, and the next two or three years this could be very exciting. This is the Beetaloo Basin in the Northern Territory, so
yeah.
So very exciting there for Falcon Oil and Gas.
Marvellous. Is that it, Marky?
One more quickie, because you noticed that Eco Atlantic,
yes,
which I've talked about a number of times before, snuck out an announcement last week saying that they'd been processing the 3D data over the Orinduik block in Guyana, offshore Guyana, and that they were very encouraged by the quality of the data and the interpretations they've made to date. This could be an absolute company maker for Eco Atlantic. Obviously, as you know, they're in with Tullow there, but also they're in the process of a potential farm out to Total. As you know, I'm absolutely convinced that Total will farm into that block. And Eco would probably rather that they hadn't offered it at the time, but it's very good for all concerned. And we're going to hear a lot more about Eco and Tullow in Guyana in the upcoming.
Well, do you know what? If people stay tuned to the podcast, they'll hear more as well, because I've got Gil coming on the podcast a bit later.
Oh, absolutely excellent! He's a good man. I enjoyed meeting with him recently. So. Well, with this one and his one, it should be a good day for Eco.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff, Marky. Thanks for that, and we'll speak next week, fella.
It's a pleasure. Thanks very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, market analyst with Spreadex. You're right, Connor?
Very good, thank you.
Now, Connor's the only looks about the bigger companies reporting this week. And so, Connor, who's up first?
We've got Whitbread. They're on Wednesday. Their full year figures on Wednesday. Obviously, they've sort of shot up recently. They hadn't been doing too well, and then they shot up last week, basically thanks to the reveal that Elliott Advisors, who are the activist investor that sort of backed Melrose's hostile takeover of GKN, had become the company's largest shareholder with a 6% stake.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's sort of on top of, I think, Sachem Head, the US hedge fund that I've got a 3.4% stake in the company, I think. And both of them, obviously, the speculation is that they're going to try and force split of the company, and, you know, ideally with Costa Coffee becoming its own company.
Yes.
That's sort of what the talk has been for a while now, with Whitbread, and that seems to be gathering momentum, with this new stake from Elliott Advisors. That seems to be really pushing the company in that direction. So obviously on in terms of its full-year figures, all the focus is going to be on Costa, basically looking at its figures, what kind of growth it's been posting. The thing is, it wasn't that great in the third quarter, in third quarter figures which come out in January. I think for the total sales to the year to date, Costa sales are up 8.3%. A lot of that is going to be down to fairly aggressive expansion of that chain. In the third quarter, things had slowed down a bit. Total sales were up 6.9%. The like-for-like sales in the UK, however, are sort of, you know, the better metric to look at. And though they were up 1% for the year-to-date, they were actually down 0.1% in the third quarter. The company blaming, you know, sort of the usual consumer issues in the UK at the moment, lower footfall on high streets and things like that, for the decline. So it's, you know, Costa Coffee is broadly doing well, but not... you know, things could still be better at the chain. In terms of Premier Inn, obviously the company isn't just Costa Coffee. Premier Inn, its performance again was strong, but far lower than Costa's. I think total sales were up 4.7% in the third quarter. You can sort of see that kind of discrepancy between the two might be why people are trying to push through this sort of split of the company. I guess to maintain, you know, it shot up quite a lot after the advisors were revealed to be involved. I think to hold on to those gains, it really needs to avoid a Costa Coffee like-for-like sales decline in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Because if people see that, then people might start to question the wisdom of the deal. In terms of what our investors have been doing, I think before the Elliott Advisor thing was revealed, I think they were buying at its sort of recent lows. However, since it's shot up to £42, I guess it's become a bit more complicated heading into its full-year figures next Wednesday, just because you've got that big old gap that it could you know, fall back towards if Costa does sort of underperform expectations as it did in the third quarter.
Yeah, the share price gapped up, like you say, from 39 coming to 42. But if you look back at the chart, right, there's one, two, three, four peaks from mid-2016 to now at 43 quid. So that seems like a strong resistance level there. So you'd suggest, and it's getting towards that now, it's like 42.18. So if it breaks above that and closes above that £43 level, may go higher, but it's a strong barrier there. Do you know what's genius about Costa? Of course, Premier Inn, you know, the same company as Whitbread, is that they've got these little machines, haven't they? These coffee machines. Whereas you've got their rivals, like Starbucks and all that, they don't do this. They've got those little automated machines where you just get your coffee from. And I think they're in every service station, pretty much, in every Premier Inn. So they don't have to, you know, splash out on building a store, you know, and all that stuff. And do you know what? I personally prefer being served by that thing, the machines, rather than the human. Because whenever you go to Starbucks, invariably there's a queue. You know, when you go to those machines, I've never queued at one of those machines. So I'm assuming they're just faster and more efficient than a human. And that's the way things are going. I mean, people talk about, you know, robots taking over our jobs. It's been happening for a long time, really, when you think about those little machines you get, you know, automated machines that can serve you faster. And that's the genius of Costa. And they're also in the headlines, aren't they, this week, about saying they're going to recycle every cup they sell by 2020. I don't know how they do this, but it's an impressive feat if they can do that. Because I was watching the news yesterday. I don't know if you saw, and I think it was Indonesia or Malaysia or some of that. But some of these rivers just full of plastic. It's horrible. These people are living amongst it. It's just awful. But so obviously acting responsible as well. About time, you should say. Cool. Okay. Whitbread, what else? What's next, Connor?
We've got Boohoo.com. They're also reporting their full year figures on Wednesday. Mm. It's actually been a pretty tough 6-7 month period for Boohoo. It's really struggled since last September. It actually hit a 14-month low at the start of April. The main issue being margins. Like its half-year figure story in September was where the sort of its decline really began. Revenue more than doubled to £262.9 million. Pre-tax profit was up 41% to £20.3 million. Really, really strong headline figures. However, there was a 200 basis points drop, sorry, in gross margin from 55.3% to 53.3%. And that was really the key issue for investors that, you know, have come to expect so much from Boohoo. I think the stock lost like 17% in a single session around its half-year figures. January, again, the two headline figures were really strong. I think total group revenue for the 4 months to the end of the year were up 100% to £228.2 million. It revised its full-year forecast higher, saying that it now expects full-year revenue to rise 90%, not the previously stated 80%. But again, investors focused on margins. I think the gross margin this time dipped from 53.1% to 52.5% for the 4 months to the end of 2017. Again, that has been what the stock hasn't been able to, investors, sorry, haven't really been receptive to the stock's big, you know, triple digit revenue growth and really strong pre-tax profit growth. It's all been about these profit margins, these gross margins. That seems to become the headline every time Boohoo reports recently. Mm-hmm. However, like I said, like the heading into Wednesday, analysts are still expecting a 90% rise in revenue to £570 million and a 35% jump in pre-tax profit to £42 million. So I think it really depends on Wednesday if investors are now finally, since it is the full-year figures, if investors are finally going to look beyond that, the sort of margin difficulties, to look at the growth Boohoo is actually posting. In terms of our clients, like, they're really, really aggressively buying the stock around 150, 155, you know, especially since it hit those lows at the start of April. We've seen a huge swell of buyers come in around those levels.
Yeah, do you know what? It's rich, isn't it? It's very highly valued. I know the growth has been good, like you say, but sooner or later, it can't keep growing like this. And you're thinking, so profit before tax for the 6 months ending the 31st of August was 20.3 million. So let's say they double that and a bit, so 50 million. 50 million profit, and yet they're valued at 1.7 billion. You know, that's a lot there. I know, what's that, 37 times some of, you know, their pre-tax profit. So it's a lot. So yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? When you come to these kind of, you know, these high PE growth stocks, if they miss on any metric, they'll take a knock. So if you think this company has potential going forward, and you want a slice of the action, I'd wait until the, because invariably, you know, these companies do not live up to their expectations in the results, and they often come back a bit, and then they start to power ahead a bit further down the line, you know, back towards the results. But yeah, it's one of those things. Sit and wait and sit on the side and see what happens. Marvis, anything else, Connor?
Yeah, finally, we're going really big. We've got Facebook, whose first quarter figures were on Wednesday. Obviously, Facebook has relentlessly been in the news for, I guess, the last year and a half now. Interestingly, you know, all the political problems it had in 2017, you know, the fallout of the US election, its role in that, its role in allowing sort of Russia to manipulate the election somewhat, didn't really affect its stock price at all. I think the stock still rose 52% across 2017. So investors were, you know, investors can be an amoral bunch at the best of times. They were not bothered at all by what was going on with Facebook. That's changed slightly this year. I think at the start of February, it hit an all-time high. That was off the back of its fourth quarter results. I think ad revenue was up 48% to just show $13 billion. Sorry, monthly active users were up 14% to 2.13 billion. And earnings per share sort of smashed expectations and came in at $2.21, I think, against an expected $1.96. However, obviously, you had the Cambridge Analytica reveal in sort of mid-March, and the stock did really take a knock in a way that it never did in 2017. I think by early April, it was like a 7-8 month low. It's at around, you know, 150. It's bounced back a bit since then. It's now just shy of 170. But, you know, it's just interesting to see that this seems to have been the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of investors actually reacting to the sort of the political chaos that is surrounding the company at the moment. However, so I guess the big question heading into Wednesday is, will these first quarter figures be enough for investors to ignore that, ignore the negative headlines, ignore the potential for some kind of punishment down the line, to focus on what should still be some fairly robust growth? I think reports have said that first quarter ad revenue should be up 62% year on year, even though it will be down like 35% on what it posted in the fourth quarter, but that's more due to like the cyclical, you know, holiday season based nature of the company's sort of ad revenue receipts. I think in terms of it also has a tendency to outperform earnings per share estimates. I think at the moment they stand at $1.36, so anything above that, if it can get to like $1.40, again, that might get investors back on board. I guess the main concern will be that the the Cambridge Analytica news and, you know, the 50 million profiles being harvested and things like that, whether that has caused a notable dip in daily and monthly active users. I think already in the fourth quarter, they'd seen like a 1 million dip in North America, which is obviously the firm's most profitable region. I think that it users had fallen from like 185 million to 184 million or something like that. Any sign of that accelerating, even if it's just by a bit, even if it's just by a couple of million, could spook investors, especially since, I guess, the full impact of the Cambridge Analytica thing might only start to be felt in the second quarter, because obviously it came towards the tail end of its financial first quarter. From our clients' perspective, though, they are buying around that 170 level, not quite in the levels they are for something like Boohoo, but there are still far more buyers than sellers around those levels. I think heading into the first quarter results, looking for some kind of bounce back towards the 180 levels that it opened the year at.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm astounded, really, that people are signing off Facebook now because they think Facebook is using their data. But what do they think there? I mean, honestly, I'm astounded by it. It's like any company, when you go on the internet and then you look, you go shopping online or you're looking for something, you don't quite buy something, you're looking for a pair of shoes or something, and then you go on Facebook and you see a pair of shoes advertised on the side there. Where do you think that's coming from? I mean, it's like, you know, I can't understand. And to me, and you know, Mark Zuckerberg is right. You know, I would prefer more targeted ads. If that's the way the model exists, you know, adverts, I would prefer more targeted ads to random ads that, you know, don't appeal to me whatsoever. And I'm just thinking, I can't believe the way people are shutting down. I mean, was it the issue that they thought they were just selling their data to third-party apps somewhere? Or I don't know what it was. But, yeah, and secondly, I do see it's got to have some impact, isn't it? I mean, I culled all friends on Facebook a couple of years back. I just got my nerves. Facebook, just watching pictures of other people. I don't care, really. So I just culled them all. And I realised I needed it, really, to share stuff via Fox and all that. So I kept it. I launched it again. And now, since this this thing has happened, it's a controversy, I've started upping my counter friends again, becoming more active. But you want me contrarian, thinking, what is it? And in fact, now it's more safe than ever because they've had to implement all these rules. So, you know, it's like one of those things. It is now more safe than ever, and they probably won't get your data won't get shared. Anytime you're going to share something on there, they tell you, you know, this you're sharing this and that. So, yeah, but I'm just astounded. People are so surprised by that. I mean, it was obvious, wasn't it? Connor, did you not think? Was you surprised that Facebook have my data? Yes, you put all your data in there. You put your pictures in there of everything you'd like. You've liked things. Tell them what you like. It's obvious, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, I think people. I think it's sort of the harvested headlines and things like that. It's, I guess, people become complacent and just don't think about what they're doing. When if you give it a second's thought, it's obvious that you're handing over your entire sort of like personal life to these companies. I think we're just in an age where people skip through it. I guess it's like the new version of just ticking the terms and agreements thing without reading it. You just, you know, without thinking, you give over every detail of your life without paying attention to what could be done with it. So it is a bit silly for people to be surprised by that. You have to put in to sign up. And like you said, like liking things, that is, you're just shouting at an advertising company, you know, come and get me, basically.
Exactly, yeah. You start liking lots of pictures of dogs and stuff, you may get adverts for dogs accessories. You never know, you know. Or you start liking someone's picture somewhere, you know, from, and the look, it's very clever, because even if you like someone's holiday pictures, you know, and say that's holidays in Spain or the Canary Islands, you may get adverts based on that, which is very clever, I think. But I didn't think it was what I was more concerned about, and I locked down my account, even when I had an account, I locked down my account, and you can do this. You can have only friends can search for you. So I didn't like the fact that some people have their accounts wide open and not even knowing about it, you know, can be searched from the internet and found. LinkedIn still have that. If you do a search for anyone, your LinkedIn address will come up and people can see, you know, and that's more acceptable, I suppose, because you're not revealing too much of your private life on LinkedIn. It's more, you know, it's sort of working a life, isn't it? So
I guess that's perhaps what people had an issue with. It's sort of the subterfuge of it that
they pretended, you know, they weren't as open. Yeah, I mean, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's maybe more the issue than people, like, not necessarily being surprised that things have been shared, but the manner Facebook has gone about it and sort of just the slight irresponsibility that Facebook have, ignored a lot of warning signs and things, I guess.
Okay, cool. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're never ever going to put, when you sign up, a big screen fills, signs fills your screen saying, "We are harvesting your data. Crack on." The more you input, the better we can serve you. Marvellous, Connor, thanks for that, and we'll speak next
week. Thanks very much. Cheers, thank you. Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Echo Energy. Echo. That's a ticker. At four, Blue Jay Mining. J. That's the ticker there. At three, Imi Pharma. IMM. At two, Feedback. FDBK. I wrote a blog about those on the weekend. Worth a read. Well, I would say that. You know, I put some time and effort into it. But yeah, some very interesting goings on there at a corporate level. Worth a read, FDBK. And at one, I spoke to Andrew earlier on. Most followed company is Savanna Petroleum, SAVP. All right, top five most liked RNSs came from the following companies: Ferrum Crescent, FCR, Appointment, a Mining Sense consultancy. And the main guy there is Jesus. So it's going to work out, I think. Okay, at four, Savanna Petroleum, Bushia Oil Discovery. I talked about that with Andrew. At three, Lions Gold. That's 100% of gold block achieved and director holdings. At two, Echo Energy, all to surface at second workover. And at number one, the most liked RNS came from Talao Energy. That's operational report quarter ending the 31st of March 2018. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.